Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, and we're back once again. We got the full crew reunited. We found Miles Gorham, and he is here with us to give you some of these draft hot takes. But we start things off. We're going to go around the room in the usual order here. Start things off with QB1 reporting from a place with some spotty Wi-Fi, it sounds like. But what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Everything's good. The draft has finally come to a conclusion. I'm excited to talk about the recap.
All right. And Miles, you know, we missed you after the first time we broke stuff down here, but glad to have you back, man. How you doing?
Yeah, man. I apologize. Unexpectedly.
Man, I thought JR was supposed to be the one with the bad Wi-Fi today. What's going on, Miles?
You know, I fell asleep unexpectedly, so I apologize.
I fell asleep, passed out. I mean, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And Saxy Prince, maybe the busiest man in Vikings media / budding movie superstardom / combine trainer / video editing over this past weekend. Did you pick any fares up with your Uber, or were those other jobs enough for you this weekend?
I just have to say before I comment on that, it's going to be a weird day on Climbing the Pocket when Saxy Prince has the best Wi-Fi connection of all the people that are on the pod. But as far as all that stuff, yeah, man, it's been an incredibly busy week. I kind of got a little bit sick, I think, just from all the things I had to kind of get done. But no, it was fun. Draft weekend was a lot of fun. Being over at TCO was an exciting experience. You know, I think Vikings fans are going to be really excited once they actually get to the facility. If they get a chance to either tour parts of it or whatever the case is, it's huge. It's not even quite complete, at least on the outside. So I think there's still going to be more that's going to be added to it. But no, I did not get any Uber fare this weekend, though.
Okay. All right. And I mean, I know we can't go too deep in it, but you know, how's Kunle doing? How's he feeling after, you know, getting the call, getting the invite? And I guess, how are you feeling with you know, your younger brother, you know, trying out for your favorite team?
Yeah, I mean, it's as close to the dream as you could ask for, you know.
You're gonna treat him like any other player trying out for the Vikings, or
me?
Or some other prospects?
In terms of what exactly?
Evaluating him.
Oh, I mean, I might step away from like doing the evaluation part. What I'm doing right now, actually, I'm helping him, you know, just break down film, helping him try to get ahead of the curve, and, you know, just start looking at, because that's all he's going to be doing, you know, for the next weekend. It's just going there, playing special teams. They told him they want to try him at safety first and foremost, so he might be able to do other positions after that, but definitely safety was what he was told that they want to try him out at. So yeah, as far as evaluations, yeah, I'm gonna stay away from that, and I'll let y'all can do it on my behalf.
All right. Okay. Well, we got that little bit of it, you know, out of the way here. But now we gotta get back to evaluating the Vikings draft class. And yeah, we'll just go down the row here. And I know we broke down the first couple of days. We'll bring it home with, you know, the late round picks there. And JR, I know that you know, throughout Vikings Twitter, there was a lot of, you know, I guess we'll say, sadness, a lot of salty folk, a lot of anger out there. And I guess it's understandable. I mean, I don't think that anyone here would stand up and say that the Vikings had a great draft by any of the information that we have available to us right now. When you look at kind of where guys fell on the consensus board or your board, seemed like they, you know, they had some reaches in there. They drafted some people to convert positions that maybe a little bit earlier than they needed to. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, on the last day, it seems they got a couple of value picks in there where the draft ended up coming out okay. Like, it wasn't good. It wasn't even average. It was kind of just like, meh. But it wasn't bad either. I don't think it was as bad as folks are really making it out to be. But I guess, JR, as you're going through there, because I did notice that, you know, at least one of those late round picks was someone that you talked about recently on some podcasts. So that was kind of an interesting thing to see. I guess, what were your thoughts on everything?
Yeah, I thought it was a decent draft for the most part. I'd probably give it a B minus overall if I had to put a grade on it. I don't like putting draft grades on anything because we don't know how these guys' careers are going to turn out. But if I did have to put a grade on it, I would put a B minus on it. I thought it was an interesting mixture of players. And like I alluded to earlier on my Twitter timeline, the Vikings really didn't have a win now draft like a lot of people were expecting. This was more of a team building for the future type of draft. And that started off with the first pick of day three, and that was Jalen Holmes, the defensive end from Ohio State, a guy that's going to transition inside to play defensive tackle just because he's not explosive enough to be an every down edge rusher. But he's a guy that has the versatility to play both spots. But Rick Spielman said that they're going to start him off at defensive tackle, but he's a guy that could kick outside on third downs, and he's going to be a depth piece. That's what he's going to be served as, and that's exactly what he was at Ohio State as well. He's not a guy that has possesses a tremendous amount of upside. That's just not him, and he didn't start until his senior year at Ohio State, so he was a depth piece up until that time there with them as well, and that's what I expect him to be. The next pick was Tyler Conklin, the tight end from Central Michigan. I wasn't very high on him. I had an undrafted, a free agent grade on him, priority guy, but he had some fans when they did make the selection. Just his injury concerns concerned me a bit. He did suffer a foot injury in 2016 that he just didn't seem like he recovered from to this point, but he's that receiving tight end that they have been looking for, opposite or behind of Kyle Rudolph. And we all know John DeFilippo loves to use those double tight end sets with two reliable receiving threats at tight end, and maybe he can provide value there. He's not an overly great catcher of the ball as far as having a great catch radius, but if you put it in his vicinity, he will catch the ball. So I do expect him to make the team. I just don't expect much out of him. And, I mean, he's a late-round tight end, and that's what he's going to prove to be. The next pick floored me. They took a kicker. They traded up for a kicker. We all know that's against the draft commandments, taking a kicker, taking a specialist, period. But, obviously, they wanted to upgrade from Kai Forbath, and that's exactly what they did, taking the first kicker in the draft, and Daniel Carlson, a guy that has a huge leg but was very reliable at Auburn, very good on kickoffs as well, a guy that usually puts the ball through the back of the end zone when he was at Auburn. So maybe he can provide some value there for them. And, I mean, he's going to be the guy. They're not bringing him in. They didn't trade up in the fifth round to go get him for him just to be competition with Kai Forbath. I fully expect him to be the guy going forward. That's a lot of pressure on him, but it comes with the territory of them trading up to get him. Next pick was Kobe Gotsit from Appalachian State, who I'm a huge fan of. Go back and watch him against Miami. He was very good against Miami. He was up and down against Georgia, but you did see some positive flashes from him, a guy that had some really good strength. That's what stands out about him, but he does have some balance issues. That's the biggest thing about him, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he does push Tom Compton and Danny Isadora in camp for that right guard spot. I think he can be that late round hidden gem that they have been looking for to fill that right guard spot, or just adding him in the mix to provide some further competition to those two previous guys that I mentioned in Isadora and Compton. The next pick was Ade Aruna, a guy who I had previously mentioned on some other podcasts. We all know that they like to take those upside projects, and he definitely is that edge rusher. He's about 6'5", 265 pounds. Spider chart was a bit weird. If you go and look at his spider chart on Mock Draftable, it's very up and down, but he does possess some explosive traits in certain spots, and some other spots he's not very explosive. And his film last year wasn't very jaw-dropping or anything like that because he was playing out of position. They transitioned to a 3-4 defensive front where he was playing that 4 technique. That's just not his game. But if you go back and watch his earlier film
from 2016. He was playing that 4-3 defensive end, and he looked much more comfortable. And that's what I expect. That's what I fully expect him to be for the Vikings. And the last pick of the day was Devontae Downs, the linebacker from California. And we all know that they like to take those UDFA linebackers or a linebacker in the seventh round, and that's what they did this year. A guy that tore his ACL, but Sugarman gave them the go and saying that he would fully recover from that. And his season was cut short last year, but he was a guy that can run sideline to sideline, a guy that can be a 2-3 down guy. He does have enough speed in order to do that. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what their plan is for him once he fully recovers.
Okay. All right. That was a lot. And I'm wondering now, Miles, how are you going to follow that up, man? I'm not going to make you go pick by pick and break down all of them, but I guess I'll ask you, of all the guys that kind of were picked in the on the third day of the draft there, I guess, what was your favorite pick? And outside of the kicker, were there any other kind of hedge? I don't want to talk about the kicker. I mean, you know, I was so excited. You know, they drew me back in. They went ahead and did what they're supposed to do for me every year, bringing in that athletic tight end that I'm going to get too attached to that's not going to make it through training camp. And I was ready. And then right after that, they give away draft picks to go trade up for a kicker. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on, man. But outside of the kicker, we don't need to talk about that. Because what picks did you like? What picks were you like, eh? You know, why'd they do that? And I guess you can maybe even start to talk a little bit about your favorites from the undrafted free agent class that seemed to really calm things down on Vikings Twitter once the signing started coming in.
Yeah, I love how not taking a guard early just means that the whole draft is just terrible.
Yeah, man. You know, that right guard position is the thing that stands between you and the Super Bowl. That's kind of how it goes.
That's going to make or break the Super Bowl. But no, I did like the Jalen Holmes pick. I didn't know, like, when I'd seen a little bit of his film. I didn't anticipate detail, but the more you look into it, the more it just makes so much more sense. The size, the athleticism. And I like that they came out and said he's going to be, especially plan is to have him be just a situational pass rusher. That's perfect. Let Sheldon Richardson do a lot of the work. And when he needs a spell, you need to add a little bit more speed in there. That's when you bring a guy like Jalen Holmes. You know, hopefully, you know, getting him, you know, that ball of clay for Andre Patterson, the D-line coach, is perfect, because this is kind of what I think they've been looking for. They've been looking for that guy to come into the interior and kind of be a disruptor. And we know Sheldon Richardson is going to do that, but now they have another guy behind him who can be used more in that situational role, because before they had to kind of make Tom Johnson and Shamar Stephen, they had to make that work. But now they get this, you know, get to test out a straight athletic pass rusher behind your starter. So I like that. And then obviously I like Tyler Conklin. He's another one of those guys who I had just seen a little bit of tape on before the draft. Didn't know too much about him. Just knew that he was a pretty athletic tight end. I didn't expect him to go in the fifth round. I thought he was probably going to be a little, you know, sixth, seventh round pick. But they seemed to really like his athleticism. His analytics chart looks pretty good. And then I know JR touched on the foot injury. So that, you know, maybe that had a little bit of a play into some of the stuff he did as a senior. But I hope he can find a way to stick, and I think DeFilippo got him for a reason. You know, it's probably pounding the table for them to get a move tight end. So hopefully they use him the right way, and then we'll bypass the kicker. And then obviously you got to go to the Colby Gassett. They finally get their guard. He's a guy that, you know, I could have seen him go a little bit earlier than he actually went. I could have
saved
seen him
the draft go. Right there. Save the draft.
Save the entire draft.
Save the whole draft right there with that pick. Save the whole thing.
The Super Bowl save now too. So
exactly.
no, but he is a good pick just because you look at the value and you look at his tape. He's a mauler in the run game. He can get out in space a little bit. So I think they like what he can do there. In case you know, guys like Isadora, Tom Compton, some of those guys really pan out, maybe he works his way up into the kind of being that Brandon Fusco. Type Joe Berger type, so you never know. But I like that pick a lot, especially where they got him. So those are probably my three favorite on day three. And then the rest of the guys are kind of just, besides the kicker, I mean, he's going to play his role, which is important, but I'm of the belief of never drafting specialists. But hey, the Packers drafted a punter, so that's worse to me. But
it's just, you know, I mean, they're being honest about what next season is going to be like for them, and that's okay. That makes sense. Yeah, makes sense.
It's kind of punt. But
I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of surprised
they drafted a long snapper too.
Oh, they got the long snapper too. Punter, I didn't know they got the long snapper.
But Miles,
yikes!
I mean, we added your dude that you were talking about very early in the season. Was it Jeff? How do we say his last name?
Jeff Badette.
Yeah. That was your guy. You'd mentioned him like months and months and months and months ago.
Yeah.
No mentions of your deep threat?
I'm not. Yeah. Well, you know me. So I've been looking for a gadget guy, deep threat type of guy for this offense. And that doesn't mean he's going to come in and set the world on fire as a rookie, you know, or even make the team. But I think he's got an outside chance of making the practice squad. Could potentially be that wide receiver six, especially with a guy like Caleb Jones. Looks like he's getting suspended for 4 games. But what I like about Badette, I mean, the dude ran a 4.27 at his pro day. He comes from Kentucky and then ends up doing his final year at Oklahoma. And Baker Mayfield did a really good job of finding him deep quite a bit. And that's what he is. He's that guy that you need a guy, you know, a few plays a game who could just spark the offense. You know, you need a play downfield. You need a guy that just come and find that mismatch against the safety where he can burn a safety deep one-on-one, stuff like that. Or you get him in the screen game. He can do those things that I really like. So I think, you know, you get him into camp and you see what he does in the preseason, and who knows, maybe he'll stick just because, you know, speed kills.
And last but certainly not least, Saxy Prince, what are your thoughts on the additions the Vikings made on day three? And you can't pick your brother as the favorite kind of pick or addition or invitee. You got to tell us about some other folks.
Well, I mean, he has obviously the most value for the Vikings trying to bring him in.
I mean, yeah, but, they need to improve the depth at safety. So, I mean, that does make a lot of sense.
So, I did make it a secret that I wasn't a huge fan of this draft. I kind of gave it somewhere around that C plus average. Arif Hasan came out with a wonderful article kind of breaking down the value of the Vikings draft picks, you know, per pick and the value. Basically what it is like the amount of capital spent versus, you know, amount of gain that we get for each pick. So based on that, our three worst picks were, you know, Jalen Holmes, Daniel Carson, and Devontae Downs. Now, Devontae Downs not really as big of a deal. Daniel Carson, you know, we all feel the same exact way as like, don't use draft capital for specialists. But the one that probably is a little bit concerning, obviously, the Jalen Holmes pick, just because it potentially means that Vikings could have still gotten that or, you know, better value at that pick than picking Jalen Holmes. I don't mind Jalen Holmes. I kind of with Miles on that. But, you know, as it pertains to this draft, I think people would have been a little bit more happy with it, not just like drafting the guard, but obviously, you know, plugging more of those holes that we saw maybe throughout the season that Vikings needed to address a little bit more. I guess overall, I don't have much to say about it. I wasn't a huge fan of the draft. I still like Mike Hughes. I think he's going to come in right away and compete for some of those, either third or potentially even second corner spot. Miles has got me really excited about him. But other than that, I think
CB1, baby.
Yeah, right. Other than that, I think this is definitely a draft where, yeah, we were building towards the future. And I don't think this draft was 2016 bad at all. But it's definitely not 2015 good.
But the fun part is at the end of the 2016 draft, people were happy. I mean, it kind of shows how much, you know.
It's because they filled the position.
People were happy at the end of the 2016 draft.
Positions of need, Jason.
Yes, you know
that. And with that, you know, like we constantly make fun of Spielman whenever he has a draft where he, you know, he talks about best player available, and then their best player available happens to be a need. But you know, I think this year, I think they really did try to stick as close to their board as possible and pick the top guy that was on their board at that any given pick.
Well, and I know real quick, Prince.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I know I wasn't on Friday after you guys recorded. the initial thoughts of, you know, the Brian O'Neill pick. But the one thing with that is the way the interior offensive linemen, those offensive linemen fell in round two and in round one, the idea of trading up to go get one of those guys is would have been such a, like, a waste for a right guard. I'm happy with Rick standing pat at 6'2", sticking with Brian O'Neill instead of trading up into the 50s and giving your second or just to get an interior offensive lineman that likely wouldn't move the needle from what you're going to do this year anyways in terms of what you already have in roster and the player you're going to get at that position. And as a rookie, I really don't think that there's going to be a huge drop off in terms of production for that player as a rookie. Long term, I definitely could see some of the but at the same time, you look at, but that's what it is. It's down the road. That's what draft picks are. People just expect all these draft picks have to be day one starters, contributors, all pros, whatever, you know, the all world beaters. Like they have to be this. They forget that a lot of these guys do need development, and some guys just get thrust into opportunities earlier than others. And sometimes I think it's just unfair to kind of expect that from them. So,
yeah, and with that, Miles, I guess maybe this is more of an open question for everyone because it's something I thought about as well too. You know, there was probably at least one or two scenarios that the Vikings, you know, when they were doing their own personal mock drafts. They're like, okay, you know, let's say if we stay at 30 and there's a run on guards, what's our options or tackles, whatever the case is. That scenario probably exists, but they probably, wrongly guessed, but, you know, it was their guess that wouldn't have happened.
Well, the history
does show that these top end guards usually slip to that middle to the bottom half of that second round. Right. So that's a game that they try to play. My question would be, and this is something I think I opened up on the last pod, is had we not selected Mike Hughes at 30, let's say we drop down, you know, four spots or whatever. So my question would be two things. Do we still feel Mike Hughes would have still been on the board had we traded down? And if we did trade down, could we have potentially selected a guard and Mike Hughes or a comparable player still be available, and the Vikings made 2 second-round selections? Because I know we were all of us were kind of really on that, you know, the Vikings maybe should make 2 second-round picks. But do you guys feel as if, let's say Mike Hughes wasn't the guy they picked, they traded down, picked a guard, do you think there would have been a player with comparable value that they could have selected as their second-round pick?
I mean, I guess I'll jump in on this one. Like the option of trading back a couple spots, I mean, I guess it sounds theoretically, sure, maybe they could have done that. But I think the only trade that we saw happen after them was the Baltimore trade, right? And it was clear that they didn't want to go back as far as the Baltimore pick. I mean, if we're being honest and you're being kind of true to the, you know, team trade back philosophy, you're probably going to be better off more often than not trading back and getting the extra draft capital and then making your picks there. But it seemed clear to me that, you know, the Vikings and also the NFL kind of looked at Mike Hughes as the end of a tier of quality for cornerbacks, because I mean, the next one wasn't picked for like, I feel like half a round after Mike Hughes, and the Vikings clearly identified, you know, corners as a position that they wanted to, you know, bolster in this draft with, you know, a high quality player. And as much as, you know, I know that a lot of the talk is, you know, the corner, we had good coverage grades, Trey Waynes is back, Xavier Rhodes is back, but your nickel corner is a starter. And Terrence Newman played 555 snaps last year, right? So expecting, you know, a 40-year-old dude to come in and do that again seems crazy. Mackenzie Alexander has yet to fully earn the trust of the team. So you do have a huge question at a position where you really can never have enough depth. So them going out and aggressively targeting a high value position on the defense early, I mean, we can say, because I think many of us thought that, you know, maybe Isaiah Oliver and Mike Hughes were very similar players or whatever it might be, or maybe an MJ Stewart and Mike Hughes were similar players, but it seemed clear that the Vikings and the league saw a fairly decently sized gap between Mike Hughes and some of these other guys. And I don't think the Vikings wanted to risk losing him by trading back to where they would have to go to Baltimore to potentially get, I don't know which guards were even going in that range at that point, because I mean, the run on guards, even if they were to make that trade with Baltimore, there's no guarantee that they get the guy that they want, because I mean, Austin Corbett went at 33. Like, who thought Austin Corbett was going at 33 when they did anyone's mock draft? You know, like that mock, the run started, I think, even earlier than any of us would have imagined. So, I mean, there's a possibility they trade back and still can't get what they want.
So then, the last one, Connor Williams, ended up going at 50. So you drop back to, where was it? Pick 51 or 52, whatever.
52, yeah. Baltimore's pick was 52.
Yeah, so you still don't even get those guys. I mean, obviously, I think they would have considered trading up at that point. But it also, like, to me, goes to show that they didn't have any of those offensive linemen graded as highly or even close to as high as Mike Hughes, because I think if they'd even had them close, like they had had one of those guys close to Mike Hughes, they might have pulled the trigger, because they knew it was a major need. They knew it was something they wanted to get solidified. And we've seen them do that in the past, where they have guys that are probably – they might have another position at a higher grade, but they choose to take a guy of a similar, at least close to that grade, but it fills a position in need. So this, to me, just says that Mike Hughes was far and away the best player on their board at a position I say is a need, just because, like I said before, you don't – the draft isn't just about year one. The draft is about years 2, 3, and 4. Because you have guys like Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander in 2 years who could be off the team. So you've already filled a role, and by that time Mike Hughes is going to be a veteran who's hopefully played a lot of snaps and has shown a lot of progress. So I think that's what that pick is. And yeah, they probably rolled the dice a little bit on expecting there to be a few more of these interior offensive linemen available, because literally history, this is the first time in the history of the NFL draft that, was it 10 or 12, 10, 10 offensive linemen went in the first 50 picks. Like, I mean, it's pretty crazy to me that they should be condemned for betting on the side of history because they took a chance. But at the end of the day, they got, like, it's not like they got Colton Miller at 30.
With that point, Miles, something that stood out to me is that something that Spielman had said during his after on Friday night when he had his press conference about, you know, day two and the picks there, is he talked about really feeling like they at 62 they really felt like they had to take an offensive lineman, which is a little bit worrisome, because I definitely agree with your point. I think Mike Hughes was very high on their draft board compared to any of these offensive linemen that they could potentially have gotten with that second pick. But then they put themselves in a position as well, instead of maybe sticking to their board, they probably deviated from the board a little bit for that 62nd pick, where they were just like, you know, we'd have to take an offensive lineman here. And not to satisfy fans or whatever, but they felt like they needed to. And I think that's the thing that's most worrisome going into that second pick, because then you ask yourself, well, if you feel like you have to pull a trigger on the guy higher than you want to, why not just trade down? You know, it ideally, you know, yeah, you're not going to get the offensive lineman that you may or may not want. But again, I think you can supplement it with getting higher value picks at other positions, potentially at other positions at more premium spots. So that was just something that stood out to me Go ahead.
No, I'm guessing that out of that, the whole crop of, I guess you could say, day two linemen that they expected to be around, Brian O'Neill was literally the — I'm not saying he's the last player that they wanted to take, you know, out of all the options, but in terms of what was left, he was literally the last of the cutoff. I'm guessing he was literally the cutoff. And though the number was, what, 11 total offensive linemen, that went in the top in the first three rounds. I think that was the full number. With that, I mean, you have that many guys go. He had to have been their last cutoff, and he probably was just on the borderline of where they had him, but they weren't, you know, trading back a few spots. You know, you never know if a team like Tampa or Indianapolis, who were right after them, was going to take him, or Oakland at 65, they took an offensive tackle, so they didn't want to risk dropping too far back to not get the guy that was probably left on their in terms of their tiers. So that'd be my guess is why they took him at 62 instead of risking anything.
So JR, question for you, because I know that like these sort of hypotheticals have been thrown around a little bit online here on Twitter, people talking about stuff. But if it's you, I guess, would you be happier if the Vikings came out of it just even now knowing that, you know, Connor Williams didn't go until pick 50? Would you be happier if the Vikings pulled the trigger on Connor Williams at 30 and then ended up with like Carlton Davis or something at 62 versus going with Mike Hughes at 30 and then, you know, getting the developmental tackle at 62?
Well, I'm always a firm believer in sticking to your board and take the guy that's highest on your board. And Mike Hughes was that. And I think they made the correct decision with Mike Hughes. And we've all admitted that they miscalculated when the interior offensive line run was going to happen. And, I mean, that's something you can't backtrack or foresee coming. And, I mean, they just missed the boat on that one, period, point blank. Now, I think they got a high-caliber type of prospect in Mike Hughes, so it makes up for that. But the Brian O'Neill pick made sense to me because – I mean, they have two tackles right now in Mike Remmers and Reef. I think they should go with those two guys as their tackle. But now we have that backup depth guy, which we haven't had in a long time as far as a project. I think O'Neal probably has more upside than what Rashad Hill does have in the long term. But who knows when we will see that. So I think they made the correct decision going with Hughes, but unfortunately ended up with Brian O'Neal. And that's not a knock against him or anything, but it was obvious that he wasn't very high on their board as some other guys that went prior to him.
Okay, and JR, well, I got you here, I guess, because again, you know, I mean, you do this drafting and you're pretty good at it. You called the Aruna pick, and you also called out the running back there from Jacksonville State, said that he'd be someone that maybe the Vikings would look at late in the draft. He ends up coming in as an undrafted free agent, but tell us about him, and I guess what are your thoughts on his chances of actually sticking on the 53-man roster?
Yeah, so his name is Rock Thomas. I'm sure everybody knows that by now. I've been a huge advocate for him throughout this entire draft process. When I first heard about him, it actually was one of the first games of the year. I can't remember who they were playing at the time, but it's the one play where he catches the screen out of the backfield and makes a spin move. And a couple weeks after that, they played Georgia Tech. And I'm like, man, this guy is pretty good. What's his name? So I looked him up, and it turns out that he was a former five-star recruit at Auburn. And he just had some guys ahead of him and got lost in the shuffle down there. He ended up transferring down to Jacksonville State, where he ended up being a main contributor, a key feature guy for them. Ended up being OVC Conference Offensive Player of the Year. So obviously he had a huge impact down there. He didn't test overly well, which was surprising to me because he plays very explosive on film. He's more of a tape guy as opposed to exactly how he tested at the combine. And that was one of the biggest reasons why he ended up going undrafted, just because of how bad he did test. But he's a guy that can come in and be that number three back behind Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray. He's not a guy that can carry a full load out of the backfield, but if you ask him to spell them for a couple plays, maybe get 3 to 5 carries a game and catch the ball out of the backfield, I think he's capable of doing that. He's perfect in a zone scheme, a guy that makes his money off inside and outside zones. He's better running on the perimeter, though, just because he's very quick and very shifty. So I think he can find a role now. That number three running back spot is going to be a gauntlet, though. They bought in the Boone guy, I believe it's his last name, from Cincinnati. Mac Brown is already in-house, and they signed Cameron Petway as well. So that third spot is definitely going to be one of the bigger battles in training camp.
Love it, love it, love it. And I love the fact that, you know, we do have a lot of guys coming in, and there are going to be a lot of competitions. And there's another player that I'm curious about, because a lot of hype, a lot of people liked him. But his conversion from, you know, college game to the pros was something that people were really having a difficult time projecting. Tell me about Hercules, man. the 245-pound defensive tackle? How does that even work?
He's a guy that's very, very productive at Washington State, but obviously he was playing out of position. But I don't really know why. I don't really know why they played him there, but just because he doesn't translate to there in the NFL. Obviously, he's too light to play on the interior, but he was a very productive player there for them. The Vikings listed him as a running back, so it's going to be interesting to see how he does translate to being a linebacker full-time because he hasn't played it before. He's only played along the defensive line when he was at Washington State, but if you turn on his film, he jumps off the film immediately, and he's a guy, if you've never heard of him or don't know what his jersey number is at all, if you watch one Washington State game on defense, you'll know exactly who he is. He's a guy that stands out amongst the pack on film. And obviously, like I alluded to earlier, he's not going to play defensive tackle just because he won't be able to hold up there. He's only 245 pounds. And I really don't know how he's going to translate to the NFL game. And we all know linebacker is not easy because there's so much going on and so much you have to read and process in front of you. It's not one of those positions where you can just plug and play a guy even though he's never played it before. So it's really going to be interesting to see how he does translate now that he is a linebacker full time.
All right, so Jay, I'm gonna put you back on the spot here. I think on Norse Code, I was listening to Arif and them on the podcast. They said that, you know, usually like about on average, like three guys from like undrafted free agency end up on the team or something like that. So if you had to pick three guys from this this class of undrafted free agents, who do you think are gonna make the team?
Three. So I'll go with Rock Thomas. I'll go with Houghton Hill, and the last one I'll go with, his name is Corey Robertson, the receiver from Southern Miss.
Okay. Miles, same question. What you got?
That was kind of mine. But I'll switch. So I'll do Rock Thomas, Houghton Hill, and then I'll do Jeff Badette.
Your mans. You got to go with your mans.
Yeah.
And then Saxy Prince, what about you? I feel like I know how this one's going to go, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of them is going to be Baby Bro. Once he eventually gets signed. And then I will go Houghton Hill. I think that he's a pretty obvious one. And then I'll go Rock Thomas.
All right. And Saxy Prince, rapid fire once again, keeping it with you first. Starting offensive line for the Minnesota Vikings when the season starts.
Ooh, that's a good one. Left tackle, I'll go with Reef. Left guard, I'll go with Easton. Center, Elfline. Right guard, I will go with I'll go with Danny Isadora. And then right tackle, I'll go with Remmers.
Okay, Miles, what about you?
Left tackle, Riley Reef. Left guard, Nick Easton. Center, Pat Elfline. Right guard, Mike Remmers. Right tackle, Brian O'Neill.
Wow.
I'm going out on a limb here. Just be
wow. And I'm not going to lie to you. I know nothing about Brian O'Neill. I knew nothing about him before we picked him. But because people are hating on him so hard, I'm a Brian O'Neill fan. I want him to work out just so people can.
That's kind of why I did it too.
For getting so worked up about the draft.
Even though I think
it was done.
Right. Even though I think it'd be Rashad Hill over Brian O'Neill this year, but please, I'm going to say Brian O'Neill.
Please, no. And JR, how about you, man? Same question.
So I'm going to go left tackle, Reef, left guard, Easton, center, Elfline. I'm going with the upset. I'm going to go right guard, Colby Gotsit.
Let's go.
Throwing him in the fire from day
Let's
one.
Let's go.
And right
Colby,
tackle.
Colby Fusco.
Right tackle, Mike Remmers.
All right. Yeah. See, that's where I'm even though I not gonna lie, if the scenario Miles laid out actually plays out that way and like works, I mean, that would be kind of nice. You wouldn't be able to tell Rick nothing for a really long time, but it'd be nice if it worked out. But I'm kind of hoping that, you know, it's one of the scenarios that either Prince or JR laid out where we just keep everyone where they were at last year and have some guys fight for the right guard spot. Leave Remmers where he's at. It's not like he was great when we put him at guard or anything. But Yeah, I think that's it. You know, I feel like we've got through everything we wanted to touch on there. We got through the day three picks. We got through the undrafted free agents, offensive line. It's Prince, Miles, JR. Anything else you guys wanted to cover before we wrap this thing up?
No, I'm good.
Okay. I'm good, man.
All right. All right. All right. Well, gentlemen, it's been a lot. It's been a busy draft season, but it's been fun. You know, and we all survived. Everyone made it through the whole draft weekend largely intact. Vikings Twitter seems to have come back to some semblance of sanity here over the past couple of days now that, you know, we got all these undrafted free agents in who are apparently better than the guys we drafted in the first couple of rounds. So it's whatever. It doesn't matter how we get there. We got there, and the draft ended up turning out okay. Strangely, the draft experts in that Daily Norseman Roundup article, they were far kinder to the Vikings draft than I would have been, because I think our average draft grade in there was like a B or like A minuses and stuff.
That wasn't me.
Seems crazy. I gave him a C minus. But obviously, like JR said, they haven't played any games yet, so we'll see how it all works out. We hope that this draft, like the ones in the past where we've been upset, ends up turning out to be one of the ones where we find some diamonds in the rough. So, yeah, that's it. That's all. That's our show for today. As I said at the beginning, my name's Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter, here with the full crew, JR, Miles, and the Saxy Prince. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.